Good evening and welcome to Outbeat Now. I'm Greg Moralia, here with my co-host Jeff Basham. Outbeat Now is a public affairs show for and about the LGBT community here in the North Bay. And we're one of the four Outbeat radio shows airing every month on Sunday nights right here on KRCB Radio. Tonight, we're exploring the intersections of Christianity and sexuality. Sometimes the two collide at levels that range from being very personal to highly political. In the first half of the hour, Jeff and I will be talking with Reverend Leslie Heckathorn from the Center for Spiritual Living here in Santa Rosa and Reverend Jamie Washington from the Unity Fellowship Church of Baltimore. And in the Outbeat Youth segment, I'll continue this topic as I talk with Michael Brigiotti, a 21-year-old who was studying to become a Baptist minister at Samford University in Alabama just before coming out as a gay man. All of this and much more is coming up right after your Outbeat Radio news for this Sunday, August 26th, 2012. In England this week, a senior bishop in the Church of England has recorded a video endorsing marriage equality as part of the Out for Marriage campaign. Bishop of Buckingham Alan Wilson, who is a straight father of five, said, "It all comes down to how we see gay people and how we see God. We don't actually believe gay people are sick or stunted or criminal. We don't believe God is an angry old man out to get us. Let us stop behaving as though we did. Recognizing gay people are equal means we don't dilute or spoil marriage, but potentially enrich it. The United Kingdom currently offers civil partnerships to gay couples, but the government is considering legislation to establish marriage rights, something backed by Prime Minister David Cameron. Wilson joins London Mayor Boris Johnson, several members of the Parliament, and other clergy members in supporting marriage equality." And here in California, lawyers for the gay and lesbian plaintiffs in the Hollingsworth versus Perry, formerly Perry versus Brown and Perry versus Schwarzenegger, the federal case challenging the constitutionality of California's Prop 8, filed a brief asking the nation's highest court not to hear the case. If the U.S. Supreme Court declines to hear the case, the lower court ruling found that Prop 8 unconstitutional will stand and marriage equality could be restored in California as early as the end of the year. And finally, the Fine and Performing Arts Department at Napa Valley College will present the Laramie Project 10 years later. This is the epilogue to the now famous Laramie Project play, written and produced by the Tectonic Theater Project in 1998, about the murder of Matthew Shepard in Laramie, Wyoming. The theater company returned to Laramie in 2008, 10 years later, to re-interview the people of the town and to see what's changed in Laramie. What's different about this play is that the interviews also include the two men responsible for the vicious hate crime, Russell Henderson and Aaron McKinney. But like the first play, the Laramie Project 10 years later is gripping and highly emotional. Napa Valley College is the first college theater company in California to perform this new play. Play director and theater professor Jennifer King brought the original Laramie Project play to Napa Valley in 2002, and now, 10 years later, brings this new play to the North Bay. Performances begin on September 21st, every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday through October 7th. And we'll have Professor King and some of her student actors on the Outbeat Youth segment on the fourth Sunday of September. And stay tuned here to Outbeat News for more information about tickets and performance times in the coming week. Now here's your calendar of events for this coming week. On Monday, August 27th, from 5 to 7 p.m., Spectrum's Men's Mixer will happen at the Four Points Sheraton, 1010 Northgate Drive in San Rafael. And on Tuesday, August 28th at 1:30 p.m., the Santa Rosa Senior Group will meet at the Glacier Center in Santa Rosa. And also on Tuesday from 5 to 6:30 p.m., Q Youth LGBT Youth Group meeting will take place at Voices, 780 Lincoln Avenue in Napa. This is for youth 16 to 24. And also on Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., the Transgender North Bay Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And on Thursday, August 30th at 6:30 p.m., the Men's Peer-to-Peer HIV Group will meet at Face-to-Face, 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. And also on Thursday at 7 p.m., the Positive Images Youth Group will meet at Santa Rosa High School in the Teachers Lounge. And finally, on Sunday, September 2nd at 9 p.m., the Russian River White Party, The Blizzard, will take place at Jerry Knight's historic River Theater in Guerneville. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnavelli, I'm Greg Moralia. And if you're just joining us here on Outbeat Now, tonight we're talking about the intersections of Christianity and sexuality. Earlier this month, Jeff and I each had a chance to sit down and talk with two very distinguished spiritual leaders. Jeff met first with Reverend Leslie Heckathorn, who's a staff minister at the Center for Spiritual Living here in Santa Rosa. She's been active in the center since 1998, providing educational classes, serving the youth program, and her deepest calling, animal ministry. Reverend Heckathorn facilitates the annual Animal Remembrance Service, Pet Loss Grief Support Workshops, and participates in the annual Animal Blessing. Here's some of their conversation.
And I am here with Leslie Heckathorn. Thanks for being on the show tonight, Leslie.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
So you mentioned that you went to the church, Catholic Church. I'm wondering, did you ever experience any kind of a conflict with what you were hearing in church and what you were feeling inside, even before you came out?
Well, yes, Jeff, that's a really good question, because not only did I feel a conflict about being lesbian, but about being a woman. There was no women in clergy in Catholicism. And so I always felt that there wasn't a place for me. And, you know, so it was even bigger than being gay. It was being just a woman who I was born into this planet to be, that there wasn't a place for me. And so, but the experience has given me a lot of understanding to be more compassionate and empathetic with people that I had the opportunity to work with. Because I'm sure at some level we're all oppressed at something.
Why do you think that some of the Christian faiths are accepting of gay people while others really aren't?
Well, you know, I don't think you can even say just the Christian faith. I think there's a lot of spiritual communities that have a hard time with people who are different. And unfortunately, for a lot of us, whether you're of Christian background or of many of the other amazing faith traditions, because the bottom line is the core of every tradition is their teaching to love. It does sometimes get overshadowed by who's in charge. Yeah. But, you know, I think that there's the opportunity for people just want to be loved. Because we are spiritual beings, so it makes sense that we want to have spiritual community.
Of course.
That we want people that think like us and, you know, move through the world similarly with us and embrace us who we are.
Sure.
And that's what we expect to find in spiritual community. And sadly, it's not always there. Because, you know, especially some of the very heavy Bible churches that are so strict about teaching directly and literally from the Bible, it can be difficult.
Yeah. And then that actually brings up another question. Are all churches that say that they're teaching from the Bible, are they teaching from the same Bible?
Well, I suspect that they are, but they're interpreting it however it fits their needs,
okay.
I would suspect. But, you know, at the same time, you have that, if I have a thought or an opinion that I take a stand on, whether it's religion or not, I can find friends that help back that up. And so since I have friends that back that up, then it must be right.
Yeah.
You know, I've got my entourage of people that believe like me, so we must be right. So faith traditions are more human. That's how, you know, we can operate.
Well, I want to dive just a little bit deeper into talking about a little bit of the origins of the Bible. Can you talk a little bit about that, and what does context play in the translation of the Bible?
You can take anything out of context to meet your needs. We all can do that.
We all can.
And I think, sadly, the Bible as a beautiful teaching tool is often taken out of context. Because like anything that's written, if I write something today and 100 years from now, it may not be read in the vein that I had originally written it in, because that's going to be 100 years, hopefully, of progressive thought happened.
Yes.
And I think we have to keep that in mind when we think about the Bible and how many times it's been revised, or who had the first correct edition, if there is such a thing as a correct edition. You know, it's about teaching love, and it's about the concepts of survival. In the Old Testament, they're talking a lot about ritual for survival purpose. You know, if you think back in the context of that time, you needed to be sanitary, you needed this thing or that thing to live. And nowadays we take those same things, they may not make sense.
Exactly.
And that can apply to, you know, the approach of how some people tap the Bible against the gay community.
What advice can you give someone who left their faith, left their church? What would you tell them?
Well, I'd be very careful about giving advice.
Okay. what do you, from your experience?
Yeah, I would encourage someone to follow their heart. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you're gay or straight or young or old, there's plenty of people leaving their religions of origin for a variety of reasons. It just doesn't work for them anymore. It doesn't sing in their heart anymore. Sadly, it's happening a lot with the gay community, probably for the wrong reasons, that people are feeling like they're not accepted. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's changing as we, you know, our experience, at least in California, our right to marry. I just think following your heart and living your life from a place of kindness and peace, you'll find your way. And it might not even be at a spiritual community. Your spiritual community might be on the golf course, for all I know.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's where you find peace. Because ultimately, I think a spiritual community helps support people finding their own inner peace. And there's many ways to that, just like there's many religions, faith traditions that help people down paths that hopefully can find that for themselves. And I just encourage young people to, you know, stand tall in their own truth and in living in kindness and in peace and love so that it doesn't hurt anyone else in the process. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, they may take their actions and justify, well, because I'm doing it for this purpose. Well, don't hurt anyone along the way either.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Be kind along to the people you might bump into along the way.
That sounds like some great, great sharing. I'd call that advice. I think it's good.
Well, it probably is a version of advice, but I think it's also very careful to share wisdoms of truth from my own experience.
Exactly.
And
yes.
Let people take that for what they can.
Wonderful. So, is there any last thing that you'd like to share with our listening audience before we wrap up?
I know we're speaking to, you know, the gay, bisexual, transgender questioning community. And, you know, I just want people to remember the shoulders that we all stand on. You know, whether it's through faith or through anything else, there's a lot of people that were brave and bold to stand up for who they were in very treacherous times. I mean, today my spouse and I are married. Mm-hmm. Never thought that would happen in my lifetime. I was just tickled they were having the conversation because mm-hmm. we just really didn't think it was going to happen in our lifetime. But to not forget where we've come from mm-hmm. and to really respect the people that have come before us and, you know, because it used to be a very big political thing.
Sure.
And now we can go to festivals, and they'd be very family-oriented, a very different venue than it used to be. And I think, I hope that always, whether it's a women's movement or any, you know, gay, straight, whatever movement it might be, that we remember the shoulders of the people we stand on. Mm-hmm. You know, even in our own faith tradition, there are some women in the early days of New Thought who were standing in their conviction. And that was a big deal for women back mm-hmm. in the 1800s.
Wow.
Yeah, to really Wonderful. Respect the shoulders of the people that came before us, that were willing to say, I'm doing this because I think it's the right thing to do and mm-hmm. move forward with as much kindness as possible.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show tonight, Leslie. And I really appreciate your words and your time. If someone is listening and maybe hadn't heard of the center or you know, had heard, but they want to come back or come to the center for the first time, how do they do that? Does someone need to sign up or do...
Just come on in. We have three services on every Sunday morning. I know the young people are very tech savvy. They can find us on the internet. We have... our senior minister speaks radio talk show. So you can find us through a radio talk show. You can find us through podcast on the website, all kinds of activities on the website, and coming in person and be embraced by a community that, you know, is there to support people. Because we're a very diverse community of people that have come from all different faith backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. And where is the center located?
It's down on Occidental. It's the old skating rink. Some people might remember it from the skating rink.
The old Starscape World.
Yes, I think that's right next to the Round Table Pizza, right off Highway 12. So it's just a couple blocks in distance from Stony Point.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Leslie, for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Jeff. Been a pleasure.
Thanks, Jeff. This summer, I had the opportunity to meet Reverend Jamie Washington, who's the assistant pastor of the Unity Fellowship Church of Baltimore. He served as the Minister of Laity Relations for the Unity Fellowship Church movement and is part of the National Music Ministry team. Reverend Washington has been in the church all of his life, some 40 years of service to date. He started in the United Methodist Church and has served in the Baptist Church, the Church of God in Christ, AME, and non-denominational churches. In addition to his work in ministry, he has over 28 years working in higher education. Here's some of our conversation about the intersections of Christianity and sexuality. Well, Reverend Washington, welcome to Outbeat Now.
Thank you so much.
Let me first ask you a question about your upbringing. You're an African-American man who, as you said, started going to church as soon as you were born. And you also discovered that you were gay fairly early on in your life. When you were at church, did you remember hearing any messaging from the pulpit that was in conflict with who you knew yourself to be?
I got very clear messages. And so my first 10 years was in the United Methodist Church. And in that space, I don't remember hearing a whole lot that directly said that being gay or that homosexuality was wrong. It was just very clear that what was right was heterosexuality. After I left that space, right around age 12, again, as I started being a musician for different churches, as I moved into more some of the Baptist church spaces and then the apostolic and Pentecostal spaces, it is in those spaces that I began to hear very clear messages that homosexuality was wrong and not pleasing in the sight of God. And, you know, scriptures were used and by age 16, I was deeply steeped in a charismatic fundamentalist religious community. And so for me, what was most important was to do what God wanted me to do and to be pleasing in God's sight.
Sure. Well, faith can have such an absolute grip on people in terms of guiding them to be who they are and to do what's right and what's wrong. But what strikes me is that there is such a vast difference in various Christian faiths around those that accept the LGBT community versus those that don't. Aren't they all using the same Bible?
Well, that is a really wonderful question. You know, people often ask me when I show up as Reverend Dr. Jamie Washington, African-American pastor who is openly gay. They're like, do you read the Bible? So folks have asked me that directly. And I've said, yes, I do. I read actually probably the same one, or at least a version of the one that you read. What helps me to really kind of be able to be in space with them and really to hold where some folks might be who might have a more conservative and more absolute view is because I was them. And some of us grow up with the teaching that the Word of God is infallible, it is absolute, and that we hear that, and we have taken on the belief without examination. We take on what the pulpit or whoever our spiritual direction and leader is. And sometimes that's our parent or our grandparent, and often the pastor in the church. And even if there is some dissonance or some questioning for us, what comes back at us is, you are not to question God. Our ways are not God's ways. And justification for what it is that they believe and feel is the absolute truth. And as a young person, if that's all you get and you are stuck, and I don't want to say stuck, and you stay, and sometimes stuck in that space, then you don't have anything else. I think the folks, what research would support is most folks are not coming out, not coming up in support of LGBT spaces, don't come out until after they go away. So they go away to college, or they move out of the house, or they go away to the service, or whatever. And so there's a lot of folks coming out once they get away from where they have an opportunity to hear a different message, or if nothing more than not hear that message.
Talk more about the origins of the Bible and its revisions, and, you know, give us a sense of what how context plays in the translation of the Bible.
Yeah. So one of my favorite stories is around my own understanding of the Bible. And when I got into seminary, my Old Testament professor asked the class, so what was before the Bible? Then I began looking around the classroom, and I was a little bit taken aback, and I was like, am I the only one that's upset that the preacher doesn't know? That the teacher doesn't know it says in the beginning? And so I had never, ever been asked the question, what was before the Bible, and how old the Bible was, or how the Bible came to be. And so I had no clue, really, about this thing that I was holding as sacred and absolute, even after I had begun to navigate some of the interpretations of scripture, culture, context, and time, all of that stuff, I still, I don't know, somewhere in the back of my mind, I had imagined that God had sat down all these people one day and said, right, and then he said, and so it is. That was unconsciously the way that I had believed that it had come to be. And so when you talk about the origins and the translations, I know that many of us, particularly Christians in the Black Church, have little to no knowing about how the Bible has even come to be. Yeah. With that, then translations, culture, context, really then goes out the window. And folks then look at the scriptures and have it be something that God wrote down and God said, and that it is for now and all time. And their text, the word of God never changes. It's the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. And all of those things that then reinforce this notion that it wasn't written at a particular time in a particular cultural context to and for often a particular people and a particular purpose that has really little to nothing to do with us in the absolute way today, but still has very powerful teachings for all of us who really do see that as an important text, or important book. So what I've often engaged with Christians and other folks who around the Bible to first get an understanding of what is your relationship to the Bible and how do you hold it? Do you hold it as an absolute literal document that's infallible word of God? Do you hold it as a historical document that has some good information and some teaching? What's your relationship to it? And that is a critical piece in engaging how we can even then begin to engage what the texts are that relate to whether it's homosexuality or whether it's a divorce or whether it's drinking or gambling or anything that people use the Bible to support their reason for holding this opinion or that opinion for.
Sure. Well, many religious organizations really sort of have a standardized interpretation of the Bible that they then impose on the priests or the ministers that work for that organization. For example, the Catholic Church, I think they give very clear direction on how to interpret and teach the Bible. But what strikes me as being, really damaging or potentially damaging are those Christian evangelicals who are sort of out there on their own. Talk about how ministers are trained and what part, if any, ethics plays in biblical interpretations and leading a church and so forth.
Yeah. So, and what you name there, Greg, is absolutely right. It is very scary because it just depends. in some places, people are opening churches and growing mega ministries all over the place, and their training has been their father or their mother or their Sunday school, and they just went and they just studied the Word of God. There is not necessarily so they're taking over the ministry from the parents and so on, and people like it and they like them and it works, and it just keeps going. There are denominations that certainly have a different kind of expectation of around Christian and biblical ethics, but when folks are independent and there is no oversight of what they're doing, what they're teaching, or how they've come to learn or understand that, it just goes disengaged.
Yeah, yeah. And those are the kinds of religious leaders who have the potential of doing so much damage for individuals who grow up within the grips of a particular church or faith and then find out that who they are is in direct conflict with the teachings about right and wrong. But I also know this can occur in many structured religions, such as Catholicism, where, especially today, Catholic leaders are becoming very outspoken in the public about issues involving the LGBT community. Talk about how someone who's been made to feel outcasted by their church can find their way back to a faith if they find that that's something that's missing in their lives.
So I think that's a definitely an individual and a slow process, and depending upon the way in which that message has been put in you and the extent to which that message has been put in you, it really kind of varies from person to person. So sometimes, giving that up is not just giving up that church space, it's also giving up family or sacrificing the quality of relationship with family. Sometimes it's not that, because family is not as connected and involved, and that was the case for me. My family was, again, as I said, Christian and, believed in God and all that, but they were not fundamentalist and charismatic in that way. And so if I had decided that this just was not going to be, I can't be a part of the church anymore, then I don't suspect that would have been a huge deal in my family. They would have might have looked and kind of prayed for me, but it wouldn't have been, I wouldn't have lost them. For some folks, it really does damage that whole both family and faith relationship, and really kind of paying attention to the nuances in that is important. What I say, though, is to find a space and find people like yourself. I remember when I was with Christians, and there's a lot of LGBT Christians and Muslims and Jews who really do honor their faith tradition and want to stay a part of it, who thought they were the only ones who did. The LGBT community had not been, for many years, a safe space to be out as Christian. And so when you would get into the LGBTQ spaces, you would just hide that you liked church or that you were a person of faith because of the pain that so many folks felt. So there was such rejection and criticism of those religious spaces. And so today that's a very different, and there are many spaces where folks can go to find others who have navigated the journey. Now, so you need to get with others who have navigated the journey so that you can walk that with them and then find your way back into whatever your own faith community is. And then find others like you in your faith space, because there are those two.
Comforting advice for sure. Reverend Washington, thank you for sharing your thoughts and experience with us.
It is my pleasure. And really, thank you for this work. It is so timely. There's so much going on in our world right now with the intersection of religion and sexuality. And I'm excited to be a vessel at this time in history.
And we'll be back with the Outbeat Youth segment right after the music break.
Well, there fell in my heart, and as it fell, it rose to claim it. It was dark, and it was over you, until you kissed my lips, and you saved me. My hands, they were strong, but my knees were far too stand in your arms without falling into your feet. But there's a side to you that I never knew. All the things you'd say that were never to end. The games you'd play, you would always win. But I set fire to the rain, washed it pour. Touched your face, well, it burned, and I cried, cause I heard it screaming out your name, your name. When I lay with you, side to you that I never knew, never knew all the things you'd say that were never true, never true. And the games you'd play, you would always win, always win. But I set fire to the rain, watched it pour as I touched your face. Well, it burned when I cried, cause I heard it screaming out your name, your name. I set fire to the rain, and after it was into flames. Well, it felt something dark, cause I knew that that was the last time, the last time. Sometimes I wake up by the dawn, that heart you caught must be waiting for you. Even love when we're already over, I can't help myself from looking for you.
That was Gregory Douglass with his version of Adele's Set Fire to the Rain. You're listening to Outbeat Now on KRCB FM, Windsor, Santa Rosa. It's time now for the Outbeat Youth segment.
Please put my soul out the love. I am so, so alive.
Welcome to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. If you're joining us for the first time, Outbeat Youth is a segment for and about LGBT youth here in the North Bay and beyond, and we're here every month as part of Outbeat Now. We continue tonight's look at the intersections of sexuality and Christianity by talking with Michael Brigiotti, a 21-year-old who was studying to become a Baptist minister at Samford University in Alabama. Michael recently came out as a gay man and is here tonight to share his story and to shed a little more light on this fascinating topic. Michael, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thank you for having me.
That's great to have you here. You've got a really interesting and successful story growing up in an evangelical household and now coming out as a gay man. Tell us more about where you grew up and about your religious background as a child.
Well, I grew up in South Florida. My parents moved there from New York before I was born, and so I was born and raised down there. My father was raised Roman Catholic and my mother was raised Lutheran, and they became evangelical before they had me in their mid-20s, and so we were full swing into it by the time I was born. My older sisters were involved in church and expected to be, and I was as well. Growing up, we were very involved in the church. I remember my dad used to sing in the choir and served on the deacon's board, and my mom played the supporting roles that go along with that. We spent most Sundays and Wednesdays in church, and I remember my dad was a part of a group called Promise Keepers. That was a big thing back in the day. And so most of my experience with church began when I was little with Sunday school and church services. And as I grew up, I went to a private Christian high school and participated in their youth programs there, and also went on a few different mission trips with them and went to religious summer camps with them, and we were all growing up in that environment. We were expected to take Bible courses throughout our time there for actual class credit, and so there was a lot of exposure with that. And a lot of my friendships were based around church, and my social group was intermixed between church and private school. So
when did you start to figure out for yourself that you were gay?
In middle school, I really kind of thought I might be gay. And at that time, my parents, I think, kind of figured it out too. They had seen me express an interest in guys a little bit, and had actually sent me to a Christian counselor to talk to him about it. And it was a group called Exodus. I'm sure some of y'all are familiar with that. I only went to one session with them, and I was able to convince my parents that I was fine and I wasn't gay and it was just a phase. So from there, I kind of repressed it all through high school. That was probably when I was 12 or 13, and I pretty much repressed it until about my sophomore year of college when I was 19. And that's when I began to have some exposure to other gay people and realized that a lot of my dating relationships with female friends weren't really working out how I'd hoped they would or how I thought they should. And so that's when I really started reconsidering those feelings I had. And about a year ago or so is when I had fully come to terms with the fact that I was gay, and I just came out to my family a few months ago.
So I want to go back to Exodus for a second, because we've heard so many negative things about that whole process. We even have legislation in California now that is being proposed to prohibit, I'm going to use the word subjecting, young people to anti-gay therapies. When you went to that session, I mean, what was that like?
It was obviously a precursory session because I only went through one, and so it was maybe an hour, hour and a half. But it was a small office, and my parents were with me, and they kind of explained their concerns to him, and then I was kind of called in separately, and I talked to him about it. And I remember in his office specifically, he just said that sometimes when people tease you and put you in a box, that you respond to that. And so it was more of framed by him as a choice, as in I was choosing to be gay. And the point he tried to make with it was that people sometimes put you in a box by calling you names or teasing or whatever, and that I was just kind of responding to that and not actually gay, but I was just fitting the mold that people were trying to put me in.
Right. Wow. Well, good for you for being able to get past that, because we know so many people that have really struggled, you know, through that whole thing.
Yeah, I was really terrified of it, and I was terrified even before we started. And I was able, I think I was kind of denying myself that I was gay, and so to hear him even put up an argument about it, I think kind of caught me off guard, and I did my best from then on to kind of repress it and even convince myself and my parents a little bit that I wasn't gay. And I think that's part of where my religious tradition took me as well, was just to be afraid of it.
Sure. So what drew you then to pursue a theological education at college?
I had grown up, as I said, in church, and my social circles in high school were very much based around religion. And going to private school, you know, people tend to have a little bit more affluence and a little bit more free time. And so you always have the stereotypical private school kids that are always causing more trouble than the public school kids. And that was definitely true in my upbringing. And so at the time, I dated a girl my freshman year and didn't really date the rest of the way through high school. And so I think it was kind of a good way to find something I was passionate about and kind of distract myself from the fact that I was kind of feeling gay and the fact that I couldn't really express those desires where I was. And so between that and then going back to the religious counseling, I kind of thought I could just choose not to be gay. And that seemed like a good outlet. You know, it was a safe way for me. I didn't get made fun of because, you know, if I didn't go out and party or if I didn't go out and drink or I wasn't trying to hook up with girls, it was because, well, he wants to be pastor. And so there's this moral high ground people kind of put you on, and it saves you a lot of the judgment for not being part of the regular crowd. I wasn't very into sports. We didn't have the two sports that I played at the school I transferred to. We didn't have tennis or swimming, and so it was basically football or baseball, and I wasn't very into that, and so I didn't have much of a social circle, and so I'd really gotten involved with the youth group there, and that's kind of where I built a lot of my friendships. And so we'd gone to, specifically Mike Collins Ministry, I felt like was at a youth camp we'd gone to in Georgia. It was the summer after my junior year, summer before my junior year of high school. I remember going through a couple sessions all day, and I really just felt like I got a sense of joy and a sense of fulfillment out of helping people, and particularly youth at the time. I had a lot of good interactions with people that we met from other places and people that we were on the trip with, and had some really good input into my life. And just to see everyone in this kind of loving environment and kind of carefree, and you could see there was a lot of different people and a lot of people that normally weren't in our youth group crowd that had gone with us, and you could tell they were just having a good time. And so I think I had a passion to really help people and take care of people and make people feel loved and accepted. And I thought at the time that a theological degree would be the best way to go about that.
Now, this was a Baptist college, and you grew up in an evangelical household. How did that come about? Was it just the school, or?
It was mostly the fact that the high school I went to was sponsored by a Baptist school, and my parents weren't members of the church there. But the youth group I was involved in there was Baptist. And so my traditional upbringing and my upbringing at home was evangelical, but then my exposure to youth group and all in high school was mostly in a Baptist tradition. I was exploring getting away from home for a little bit. I wanted to go somewhere new after living in South Florida my whole life. And if I was going to go out of state, I figured I might as well do private school, and I'd gotten a good scholarship if I were to study religion there.
So from South Florida, you went to Birmingham, Alabama.
Yes.
Wow.
It was much, much different, which was certainly a good thing. I'd never spent more than a few weeks anywhere else, and so it was a new area to explore, and it did give me a lot of space, but it was a lot different, and I was always kind of funny. Myself, being from South Florida, Birmingham kind of seemed like a small town to me, but then there were people at school that had come from rural parts of the South. I had friends from Tupelo, Mississippi, and Athens, Georgia, and Decatur, Alabama, and so that was like the big city to them, and so it was very interesting transition.
Sure. Well, I'm going to tap your theological education here for a bit and ask you to help us sort out the differences between Christian fundamentalists, evangelicals, and Pentecostals. I think a lot of times society lumps all three of those into one big group. Tell us how they're different.
Fundamentalist is a very broad term, and that is used in theological circles to describe people who take the Bible literally as being error-free and 100% true. And they call it, the term that they use is inerrant, which means that there are no errors and no inconsistencies, even from a literary perspective in it, which certainly is not the case. And so that is fundamentalist. You can be on either side of the spectrum. There are some extremely conservative fundamentalists and extremely traditional fundamentalists, but then you have Pentecostals who are often fundamentalists, and they're very charismatic in their expression of worship. Pentecostals tend to be much more centered around the self-experience of God. They, similar to evangelicals, though, they do tend to emphasize spending a lot of time in the actual church building and socializing with people in the church. And that is certainly one thing that all three groups have in common, is this bond that you do have because you spend so much time with these people in a religious setting. Pentecostals tend to be more charismatic. Pentecostals would be, you hear about the people that handle snakes and what they call slaying in the spirit, which is people praying, what they call in tongues. And they're very big into like apostolic gifts, like you see in the Acts of the Apostles in the Bible and Jesus's miracles. Pentecostals believe that they have the same powers and giftings and divine abilities that we see Jesus portrayed as in the Gospels and in the Acts of the Apostles, and they believe that it is part of their religious duty to continue to carry those out. Evangelicals acknowledge that some people may have those gifts, but they don't expect the entire congregation to act that way, whereas Pentecostals, healings, and for some people, snake handling, and praying in tongues, and really experiencing kind of otherworldly worship connections is seen as a sign of faithfulness and a sign of devotion to the church. Evangelicals and Pentecostals, in particular on like Baptists or Presbyterians or Catholics or Lutherans, don't have a set theological set of values that they hold. If you look at Presbyterians, they have the Westminster Confession, or Baptists have the Baptist Faith and Message, and it's a pretty comprehensive theology that you have to ascribe to be a member, for like each church to be a member of the entire organization. Whereas Pentecostals and evangelicals, the emphasis for the theological beliefs are based on each individual congregation. And so there's a lot more variance between churches on ideas that are taught and believed, because it's up to the staff, and particularly in evangelical and Pentecostal traditions, whoever the head minister figure is, to create the theological framework for the entire church.
So it's really all about that individual minister's interpretation of the Bible and their own attitudes and whatever they want to convey as the truth. Is that it?
Yeah, I would say that's correct. It doesn't certainly, I mean, there's certainly room to disagree, obviously, with either the Westminster Confession or the Baptist Faith and Message, but those were produced by a group of people that sat down that had a strong theological education, and that was a cohesive set of beliefs that they put together and agreed upon. Whereas you go into evangelical churches and it's very much one or two people that kind of set the tone of the church. And they don't really promote exploration beyond what they theologically believe. They will acknowledge that there are other viewpoints, but they insist that theirs is right.
Sure.
And insist is probably a light word to use there.
So tell us how all of this fits together or compares with and I'll use the word traditional faith. That maybe is not the appropriate word, but Catholicism, Lutherans, you mentioned Presbyterians. How do the fundamental religions and evangelicals regard those?
The thing with evangelicals, Pentecostals, and fundamentalists is really the sense of power in the individual ministers. Their biggest bone that those people generally have to pick with what we would consider, those are the churches you listed, are considered high church traditions, is that there's not enough room for the Spirit to move. They believe that Catholicism in particular is a big part of Catholicism is the prayers and the repetition and the traditions and the sacraments. Whereas if you go into Pentecostal tradition, those are frowned upon. In some cases, there are Pentecostals and evangelicals that don't even view Anglicans, Catholics, Lutherans as being part of the Christian tradition because they don't have enough freedom for the Spirit to move, as they would put it.
What's your sense of how all of these faiths regard LGBT issues? And what I'm talking about are the evangelicals, Pentecostals, and fundamentalist Christians.
I would say, from my experience, you have the fundamentalists who are actively opposed to it. Those are going to be the people that are most likely to step out and say something to you and preach it from the pulpit that homosexuality is a sin and that gay marriage is a sin and that any kind of gay relationships are a sin. And then you have Pentecostals who will sometimes accept the people in their church as long as they don't know or as long as it's not public knowledge. They won't necessarily preach it as much from the pulpit, but sometimes you have groups that, you know, if you were to express to another church member, like, I have these feelings of being gay or I think I'm gay or, you know, bisexual even, then they'll pray for you because they believe it's something demonic in you. And so I'd say fundamentalists just believe it's a sin and it's wrong and we can choose to do otherwise. Pentecostals kind of believe that you're possessed and it's really nothing you can control, but if we pray, then it's your responsibility to take care of it from there.
Okay. Well, a lot of young people, you know, have said what a grip these religions have on them, especially while they're living at home. How did you navigate through all of that?
I was fairly lucky. I'm the youngest of three. My parents had two older girls that were 10 and 12 years older than me, and so they were pretty relaxed by the time I came around. I was fortunate in that my parents didn't really ask too many questions as long as I was not coming home in handcuffs or drunk. And so I really had the opportunity to kind of explore it on my own. And I mean, during high school, a lot of it I didn't even need to be instructed in because I was still running away from that earlier experience of thinking I might be gay and trying to repress it. And so I'd kind of thrown myself into it. I'm still navigating, you know, conversations with my parents, even now that I'm out to them, as far as what they believe religiously and what I believe religiously are different. And it does cause a lot of tension. And I think for me, I just have to remember that there are different viewpoints on things and that it took me a while to work through a lot of the different aspects of being both religious and LGBT. And so I have to be patient and give them the time to do that as well. And for me, I found some great resources that really helped me work through. There's a movie called For the Bible Tells Me So that I watched, and that did a lot for me. And then there was a book I read. I don't remember the title of it, but it was a collection of stories about people who had grown up religious and gay. And just, I really think I learned by example and learned by other people's experiences with it.
So you mentioned that things began to change for you in college, which is obviously a great time when people are away and they can kind of discover who they are and they're away from that grip that I mentioned earlier. Was there a particular event, or was it the movie that you just mentioned, that helped you start to accept yourself?
I had originally figured I would try dating guys and get it out of my system and I wouldn't be interested anymore and then I could get on with a normal heterosexual relationship. And so I'd started going on dates with a couple guys and didn't really have much of a connection. And then I'd come home for the summer back to South Florida and was still kind of in that mindset. And I met someone that I really met a guy that I really, really cared about. And so to see that for me, it was more than just the physical sense and that I really connected on a deeper level to another guy was what made me. I mean, for me, it was just a moment where I was like, oh, crap, you know, I really am gay because this is who I want to be with and who I want to spend time with. And this is what I derive joy out of and not just physically. And so I think for me, that experience of really experiencing what it felt like to have that emotional connection to somebody was what really prompted me to start considering how I could be both religious and gay. And I felt like at that point, you know, everyone, no matter what you believe, I mean, almost every religion will say that God created us and created us to have joy and be happy. And so for me, I kind of saw that, you know, this is what makes me joyful. This is what makes me happy. And this is the way I feel like I'm most myself. And so it was at that point that I realized I was going to have to start working through reconciling both, because both were a big part of my life.
And so you mentioned that you told your parents. How did you go about doing that, and how did it go?
I had spent all summer, and I was dating a guy at the time. And so I had spent a lot of time out and would spend a lot of time away from the house, which was a little bit unusual for my parents. And unfortunately, I did lie to them multiple times about where I was. And so when I left for school, I just had felt awful, because I'd always been kind of close to my parents this whole summer past, that they didn't really know where I was or what I was up to. And I could tell they were worried about me. And the guy I was dating at the time, him and I were joking that if they only knew how boring we were, they wouldn't be worried at all. And so I decided to go ahead and leave them a letter when I got back, or before I left for school. And I had the letter all typed up and ready to go. And I actually chickened out right before I left and grabbed it off the counter and took it with me. And then it was actually, thank you to Facebook, that my parents kind of found out. I had liked an LGBT page for something that they were either starting at my school or another school nearby. And my mom had seen it on her newsfeed. And I got an email like, do we need to talk? And so I just emailed them back the letter. And the letter basically just talked about, you know, growing up and how hard it was for me to say it. And I really, you know, just wanted them to understand all of who I was. And I loved them and accepted them. And I was hoping for the same out of them. And with my parents, the biggest thing I tried to state when I first came out to them was that, one, I was the same person and they were just getting to really know all of me now. And two, I wanted to really be honest with them and maintain that closeness that you have when you're honest with people. And that's why I was doing it. And thirdly, I know from a lot of my friends' experiences that parents sometimes feel like they failed or messed up when their child comes out to them, or that it's something that they did. And so I really wanted to stress that it wasn't their fault and that it wasn't a negative thing, but if anything, they had really raised me well and strong enough to follow what I thought was right and what I thought was going to make me happy.
And so how are they today?
They're still working through it. Right after, a couple days after that letter, they called me and my dad cried and told me he wanted me to go to counseling and he felt like he messed up. And so they have worked through it since. You know, I just made an effort really every time I went home and stayed with them to just show them that I was still normal and show them that all the stereotypes that people sometimes push aren't true. Like, I still, you know, my dad, I think, expected me to come home wearing a pink polo shirt and sporting a little dog or something. But I came home and, you know, we still did the same things together. I went fishing with them. I went and still can do yard work and, you know, still enjoy going to the gym. And so stuff like that, I think, has really helped my parents work through the fact that, okay, you know, he really is the same person. My mom is a lot more accepting of it. And I had given them about 6 months head start on telling anyone else. I came out to a friend or two at school, but as far as the rest of my family, I wanted to give them time to really deal with it. And so Christmas, my dad still had just refused to talk about it. And so I remember one night I actually sat him down, just said, listen, like, you know, my parents had found out that I was dating somebody and my mom and I had kind of talked about it, but my dad just ignored the whole thing. And so I sat down with him and just explained to him that, like, I wanted to be able to share my life with him and I wanted to be able to share what I was doing and all these cool experiences I was having. But I didn't feel like I could do that because he always got angry about it. And so I basically gave him an ultimatum and said, you know, you can either be part of my life and I'll be happy to share with you and be honest with you about where I am and what I'm doing and, you know, how things make me feel. But if you're not willing to work with me on that, then know that it's your choice that you're excluding yourself from my life. And so I think when he had some time to think about it that way, that really helped. Because that, for me, I think, was one of the biggest struggles, was understanding that it's going to take them time to handle the fact that I'm gay and to adapt to the fact that I'm gay on the one hand. But then on the other hand, at some point they have to either be all right with it or not. And I think that's a particularly hard situation. You know, I was scared at that moment that he was going to say, well, fine, I don't really want to hear about your life anymore. But most of the people I know, in my experience, has been that their parents do ultimately come around to it.
Before we leave, tell us what you've learned from your experience that you would pass on to young people who are still at home in a religious household that doesn't accept LGBT people. What's your best advice for them?
My biggest thing is to realize that religion and homosexuality and those feelings that you have aren't completely incompatible. And just because your tradition or the people that you're surrounded by may not be supportive of it, that there are people out there and there are resources out there. And so one thing I think that hurts me the most is to see people completely walk away from religion when it is a big part of their life just because they feel like I can't be gay and religious. And I really don't think you have to make the choice in that. My biggest advice is just to really try and look at what parts of the religion that you value and what parts of the religion add to your life and keep those incorporated in your life. You know, you're going to have people that hate on you and people that don't understand. And you just have to learn not to take that personally. And, you know, everyone has to decide for themselves what's right. But for me, even my friends that don't know I'm gay, if they make an offhand comment about it or if they make something of a religious nature, you know, I'll kind of try and plant at least a seed of thought in there that maybe, you know, the way they were raised isn't the only way. And so just to be patient with the people around you, because most of them still do love you, even though they have this religious tradition that they adhere to that doesn't love you. I think that's one of the biggest ways we can make a difference, is to really show individuals that we're still the same person.
Excellent. Mike Brigiotti, thanks so much for being with us tonight and for sharing your amazing story with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Greg.
You can listen to the full unedited interview with Michael Brigiotti on our website at outbeatyouth.com. That wraps up this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. Remember, you can follow us all month long on MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter, and our shows are always available for download on iTunes or our own website at outbeatyouth.com. That also brings us to the end of this month's Outbeat Now show. We'd like to thank all of our special guests for giving us a better understanding of the intersections of sexuality and Christianity. Jeff and I will be back next month on the fourth Sunday of September with another edition of Outbeat Now. But be sure to tune in next Sunday night for Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Greyer. That's at 8 p.m. right here on KRCB Radio. In the meantime, have a great week, and thanks for spending your Sunday night with us.